Hello, my name is Sarah Tran, and this podcast is an interview of Susanna Nicarelli by Devin Anderson, Cecilia Lamancusa, Kate Lamangi, Emma Latham, and myself. The interview was initially about an hour long, but I've cut it down to the bits and pieces that were helpful for my video essay. In my video essay, I argued that in Susanna Nicarelli's films, she challenges the patriarchy by focusing in on the imperfections. Typically in voice recordings, one would edit out the awkward silences or the ums. However, in my edits, I did not take them out to make a point that Susanna Nicarelli makes, and that is that no one is perfect and there are imperfections.
Why did you choose to not act in your last film, Nico, 1988? And how do you actually balance acting and directing?
Yeah, that's actually a decision I took when I came to Dickinson College. Because I was, when I was there for a small course that I did with Nicoletta, I was writing Nico, and I was thinking about it because I had written a character for myself, as I did in my first two movies, and that's more or less when I decided not to act, and it was. It was not an easy choice because I think I've always acted because I thought there was something about me and my imperfections and the way I saw myself that I wanted to put into a film, because I thought it was interesting to tell the story of the kind of woman I am, both physically, because I'm very clumsy, and but also very ironic, and so I just always thought that it was fun to put myself in the film. And somehow I felt that time with Nico, I didn't need to be there. If I would have put myself in the story, it would have been too fictional, an operation that would have been too fake.
So talking a little bit about mise-en-scène now, when you're in the pre-production or production phase of filmmaking, how do you go about constructing mise-en-scène or developing it?
Well, I believe the main thing in the way I direct films for me is the distance. I like keeping a distance. I don't do many close-ups. With this distance, I'm trying to give, first of all, the space for the actors to exist. And also, there's a form of, I want to be discreet. I want the audience to be there, but not... I don't want to force emotions on the audience. I want the emotions to come out. I want what happens in front of the camera to be more important than the camera itself. So I don't want to force any kind of emotion onto the audience. I want them to think during the film. It's also something that leaves always space also for irony, whereas an extreme close-up is never ironic and never funny. That's a very dramatic way of communicating. So in the way I do the mise-en-scène, it's always this, a very few camera movements, because the camera movement has to give you a feeling, has to transmit to you a feeling. I do use camera movements, but I use them when I really need them. And I believe that if the camera moves for the entire film, then you risk not feeling anything. While if the camera is prevalently still, and then it suddenly moves in the moment where you have to feel something, it's much stronger than the impact and the emotion.
And then kind of going off a little bit, how do you, criteria-wise, determine what's important and what's not important when you're doing mise-en-scène decisions?
Well, what is not important is beauty. That is definitely something I don't care about. For me, what is important is clumsiness, and that's a word I use all the time when we're trying to. Sometimes people tend to, in cinema, people tend to think that what you're pursuing is beauty, which is not at all. What you're pursuing is truth, of course. So, and then truth for me is something that is very far from the ideal of beauty. So both when I'm casting, I try to look for imperfections when I'm doing the costumes and the hair. I think it's the imperfection that that ties, that gives reality to the character and that creates a bond with the audience. A piece of clothing tells a story, of course, a lot. Everything in a film tells stories. I mean, even the hair tells stories, and the way it's cut, the way it's colored. And I remember when we were talking about Nico's hair, Nico is always impeccable in the pictures, and she never has, you know, you guys are young, but you have white hair, and sometimes it grows back. And I have no idea how you call it in English, but in Italian we call it ricrescita. Maybe regrowth? I don't know.
Regrowth, yes, I must say.
Well, anyway, and I remember the hairdresser asking me, does Nico have any of that? And I said, no, never. She never does in the pictures, and you can tell. I mean, her hair is not, I mean, it's dyed dark, and you can really tell that it's dyed, and it's certainly not in a natural way, and it's not certainly a good job, but it was the job she wanted for herself. And she always put on makeup, and she put this, she always had this this farve, this rouge on, which was very matte. It was a line. So it wasn't perfect, but it was her way of being beautiful, and she wanted that, and she was in control of that. And I like the way different women pick something that can be makeup, a clothing element, or something, and that sticks on them because that's how they feel safe.
Luciana, like with her haircut and everything, and all the mise-en-scene, that her character is this strong emanation of gender affirmation. And it's emphasized through all of your mise-en-scene with the wardrobe, the hair, the red, everything.
The point is, Luciana is trying to make others forget that she's a woman and treat her just as if she were a man. It was the 60s, and it was a certain moment, and the Communist Party was just as much a macho system than any other system, you know, and even if it wasn't supposed to be, it should have been different, but it wasn't. So of course she's fighting for her affirmation, for her, you know, being considered, what she says, what she thinks, and not being judged by how many boyfriends she has. Fights that we live inside ourselves. And every kind of woman that is in the story is a part of us, is what we are not, what we could be, but we have chosen to be something else. And that's something that is very, very feminine. As I wanted to make movies for myself as an adolescent, I always thought that out there was some insecure girl who was afraid that, I don't know, their classmates would make fun of, who felt different, who felt out of place. And I always thought that my movie could make her feel less lonely.
So in Nico 1988, at the end of the film, she was being recorded about the sounds that she has been recording and how she's looking for the sound of the feet. And I noticed that in your other movies, Discovery at Dawn and Cosmonauta, all the women are facing a struggle or a difficulty that they eventually like try to overcome, or they do overcome. And I was wondering what the importance of the feet is and why it's important for these women to overcome it.
Yeah, of course, it's one of my favorite themes. I mean, the feet, failure, and how you deal with it, and I think it's much more interesting, of course, than the opposite, defeat and failure somehow becomes part of you, and it makes you a better person, and that's the whole thing about growing up, and I like the idea that movies show a reality in which actually defeat and failure and mistakes happen, and then they are overcome, or you just, you know, have to live with them. What I liked about Nico's character, about the real person, Nico, from the beginning, and I noticed that in the way she answered the interviews and in the things I read about her, is that she dealt with her mistakes. She didn't deny them, she just lived with them. And I like the idea of being able to live with what you did wrong. And she was a terrible mother, but she lived with that. I mean, and what I, there is a line in These Days, which actually was not written by Nico, and it was written by Jackson Brown, and when Nico was 25, so it's just a coincidence, but it represents Nico perfectly. And the line says, "Please don't confront me with my failures. I have not forgotten them." And I think that sentence contains the sense of the movie.
How does the defeat each woman from each film, from different age groups, represents what they are trying, what you are trying to communicate? So each three films have, so the first film, Cosmonauta, is of a young girl, and Discovery at Dawn is of like a middle-aged woman, and Nico is of an older woman. So what are you trying to communicate with defeat within each of those films?
Well, what I was saying before, there are different things to say in different ages. Probably that Luciana is dealing with her own identity, but everybody deals with their own identity all the time. That's always the same theme going on and on. Understanding who you are and being able to accept it and to live according to who you are and who you want to be. And that's the same theme for Luciana, who is 15, the main character of Discovery of Dawn is trying to understand who her father was, but actually through that she's trying to understand who she is. And it's always important, you know, to understand where do we come from and who our parents were. Nico has understood somehow her place in the world, I think. And then what is interesting, I think, of her character is that you would have expect a singer who once was very famous and who now is almost unknown to be disappointed, whereas she surprisingly is resolved and happy with her place in the world, and she knows where she's standing as an artist, as a woman, as a mother. I think probably she's the most resolved character of the characters I told, and I find that interesting because she's the one who fucked up the most, actually.
Yeah.
But
so I'm also focusing on Nico, and one particular point that I found especially interesting is when Richard agrees that Nico's ugly and she replies, "Good, I wasn't happy when I was beautiful." And I found this statement empowering in that it seems to challenge the beauty myth that happiness and success all ride on beauty. So I was wondering if this was your goal and what your thoughts are on this.
Of course, the idea of a woman having been so famous because she was beautiful. I mean, somehow she had been dominated by this image, and she hadn't been able to make what was behind the image come through. And that is something that comes up. She never says this directly. That's a line that I made up. But it's the sense that you get from every interview, from everything, when she says, I mean, the point is, she wasn't happy when she was beautiful. She was there for her image. You know, there's an interview where she says that, and that's actually a real interview she did. She says, "I was there for my image, even with the Velvet Underground," and that's why she refuses that past. It's as if her beauty was a curse, had been a curse, but not a curse in the sense that she was a victim, because Nico was never a victim. It was just that she wanted to be a singer, she wanted to do stuff, but it seemed like they wouldn't let her do anything except just stand there like a statue, because she was beautiful, and she was bored by this
this thing. And then the moment she turned 30, 32, 34, 35, becoming older, she became free to be who she wanted to be. This is the real interesting thing of this story, is the fact that as you become older, you feel better. Because there is an Italian politician, a woman, she's called Rossana Rassan, that she wrote a book about her story in the party, in the Communist Party. And she made me think of both of Luciana and of Nico. She said, when I started having white hair, is when the comrades actually started listening to what I was saying. And that was a great feeling. I mean, she felt empowered by this, because all of a sudden what she was saying was important, and they were not just judging her.
Final question for you, as like another group closing question, and that is, what are your goals in creating films with strong female roles, and what do you hope that these films have? Like, what specific repercussions do you hope these films have?
I want to tell stories of strong female roles that have not been told yet. And not only in a positive way, because I don't look for female heroes. I look for flawed females, but flawed in a way that has never been told. Flawed in a way that, I mean, everybody is flawed, so I'm not trying to tell stories about these heroines doing incredible things, or these perfect women, and they're very imperfect, and that's one of the main criteria in the way I build the characters and the way I choose the characters, when I'm choosing real women that have lived in history. But I believe that this imperfection, and through this imperfection, it is possible to create an identification. And we can finally see ourselves in films. And the stories are extremely interesting because they have not been told yet, or certainly not in the way I want to tell them. That's more or less my goal. I am attracted by female characters also because it's easier for me to identificate in them, because they're closer to me and I understand them more easily. Even if I have to say that all the women I've told, whose stories I have told, Nico and Luciana, and they are very different from me. They do things that I would never do. For example, Nico was on heroin, and she was a heroin addict and dependent, and she was also very, very cold at times, and she had made choices in her life that I would have never made. So, and I am also, you know, I'm not at all the type that could take drugs or things like that. That's just not me. But at the same time, I knew there was something, there was a darkness in there that I could relate to, that we all can relate to, even if I'm not a person who's, I'm not self-destructive, but I have dealt with that. I've had girlfriends and friends, I mean, girls that were like that, self-destructive, or that would always choose the wrong guy, or that would, I know. So it's a world that I know, because it belongs to the world of women, and it's a world that really deserves to be told, because it hasn't been told enough.